Chapter 9. Tricks of the Trade. Con artists are masters of misdirection, which happens to be the central element of magic. And like any good magician, a con artist not only moves our attention to where they want it, but often pairs their sleight of hand with an engaging story. They know that fanciful storytelling is more persuasive than bold-faced lies. Nobel Prize laureate Daniel Kahneman explains that people have two modes of thought. System one, which comes naturally, is automatic and intuitive and therefore fast and often emotional. And system two, which is more analytical and logical and thus slower, requires conscious thought and mental energy. A story automatically activates system one, which means that we tend to accept it at face value. The task of the con artist is to keep us from switching to system two, where we can rationally process what is happening. Depending on the dynamics of the situation, he will employ a number of psychological tactics that take advantage not only of our good nature, but also of human nature itself. Manipulation in progress. Let's take a look at a con artist's process through the imposter scam, which is the most common form of fraud in the United States. To gain compliance quickly and unquestionably to sell their story, the con artist seeks to make the subject more susceptible. Their method typically follows this pattern: establish authority, stun, reinforce credibility, tell a story. 1. Establish authority. A story is only as credible as the person who tells it, which is why a con artist will often claim to be a trusted source and person in authority, for example, government agent or lottery official. As children, we are rightly taught that obedience to authority is proper and necessary. As adults, we are often all too intimidated by those in authority and confer on them traits that are unearned, such as intelligence, compassion, and goodness. We automatically believe, therefore, that they have our best interests at heart. We rely on their expertise to serve our interests and do not easily question their commands and decisions. However, we may tend to obey authority figures even when deference flies in the face of reason and common sense. Leading social psychologist Dr. Robert Cialdini explains that symbols of authority, titles, clothes, and trappings, influence our behavior and lead to mechanical obedience. He cites one such experiment involving a doctor prescribing an unusually high and dangerous dose of medication over the phone that resulted in a 95% compliance rate. The nurses disregarded hospital policy, which forbade orders from doctors by phone, and their own judgment that the dose was clearly unsafe. The researchers concluded that the intelligence of the nurses following the orders was non-functioning. 2. Stun. When we are distracted or under pressure, we will tend to believe even highly dubious statements. Alleging that you are in trouble with the law, excitedly proclaiming you the winner of a substantial prize, or offering you a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, a con artist tries to paralyze your thought process with overwhelming fear or excitement. This is because strong emotions practically shut down the prefrontal cortex, the logic center of the brain. Adrenaline hijacks the brain and redirects control from the prefrontal cortex, the thinking brain, to the amygdala, the fear and anxiety response center. We can then no longer think clearly and make rational decisions. 3. Reinforce credibility. Before you have a chance to question their authenticity, the scammer rattles off information about you that they already know to be true. When we hear at least two truisms, we are prone to accept at face value what follows. It might go something like this. This is Agent Smith at the IRS. Is this Mr. Brown? Yes. You reside at 123 River Lane, and you recently traveled abroad. Is that correct? Yes. Mr. Brown, you're in an awful lot of trouble. or "Have I got some great news for you?" If this conversation was in person, official-looking documents would no doubt be at hand. It never ceases to amaze me just how easily swayed we become by printed material. Just because someone hands you a business card or points to a color graph as proof doesn't make everything or anything that he's saying true. And 4, tell a story. Now they spin a tale, all the while reinforcing their authority and the consequences of non-compliance. Their logic always follows the same route. If you do as they say, they can make your troubles go away or deliver on the promised riches. Be especially alert if they press you to make a quick decision and keep you focused on a narrow set of facts. Context is king. Don't get lost in the story. Take the time to evaluate the information, which will slow down your lightning-fast brain and engage your slower-thinking system too. The connection deception. The seasoned swindler may set the table for compliance long before he ever tells you his story. To do this, he will seek to deepen an emotional bond with you by building greater trust and confidence. The con in con artist is, after all, short for confidence. Courtesy of human nature, we tend to trust and subsequently be influenced by people who are like us and who like us. You're like me, and you like me. It is not true that opposites attract. We actually prefer people who are similar to us and who have similar interests. We may find someone interesting because of how different he is from us, but it's the similarities and commonalities that generate mutual liking. Like attracts like. Akin to this law is the principle of comrades in arms. People who go through life-changing situations together tend to create a significant bond. For instance, soldiers who fight battles or fraternity pledges who get hazed together usually develop strong friendships. This is also a powerful bonding method, even if the experience was not shared, but similarly experienced. As a result, two people who have never met but who have shared a similar previous experience, whether it's an illness or winning the lottery, can become instant friends. It is the "she understands me" mentality that generates these warm feelings for each other. In initial interactions, be aware when you're asked about your hobbies, hometown, values, favorite foods, and so forth, only to be followed with the shocking revelation, "Me too! What a coincidence!" Or when a person initiates a revelation. For example, "Nice watch. I have an identical one." "That's a beautiful dog. It reminds me of the one I had growing up." Or, "You look like you're having a day like mine." The expression, "flattery will get you nowhere," couldn't be further from the truth. It will get you many places that you would have otherwise never gone. One study showed that most of us are so thirsty for praise that we report greater liking for a stranger when we receive a compliment, even when we are aware that the flatterer has a clear ulterior motive. Does this mean that you should be wary of every compliment and assume a malevolent agenda? Of course not. But you do need to be mindful that flattery interferes with your assessment and judgment. We are all susceptible to falling for a con to some degree. But when our natural immunity is compromised, we become all the more receptive. In The Confidence Game, author Maria Konnikova writes, "When it comes to predicting who will fall victim to a con artist, personality generalities tend to go out the window. Instead, one of the factors that emerges is circumstance. It's not who you are, but where you happen to be at this particular moment in your life." She explains that when our emotional resilience is frayed, our cognitive defenses of reason and judgment are down, and we become particularly vulnerable. When we are lonely, financially downtrodden, or dealing with a serious injury, trauma, or major life change, we're most at risk. In other words, we can't underestimate the strength of the psychological pull. For instance, when we are in crisis, we often look for someone to talk to share with. Our number one emotional need is to feel connected to others. Pain, emotional or physical, causes us to feel alone, and loneliness further exacerbates the pain. When we establish a connection with another person, we no longer feel alone, and the intensity of our pain is eased. Desperate for relief, we become all too willing to dispense with reason. We blind ourselves to the truth because we so eagerly want to believe. Even as the logic of our decision becomes murky and the facts no longer add up, the ego forces us forward, clinging tightly to an ever-fading hope. We do the job of the con artist for him. We sell ourselves. He no longer needs to exert pressure when our own fear of yet another failure fuels our willingness to believe him. Outside of the con, why do rational people sometimes make irrational decisions? Why do we willingly throw good money after bad? As any master stock trader will advise, we start losing money the second we allow our emotions to influence our trading decisions. When investors put on blinders, ignore empirical evidence, and dedicate themselves to recovering as much of their loss as possible, we say they're chasing a loss. Our allegiance to stubborn persistence tends to become stronger once we have invested time, money, or energy into something, whether it's a tumbling stock, doomed relationship, or dead-end job. It's easy to succumb to the sunk cost fallacy. I can't quit now because I'll lose everything I've already invested. Misguided commitment is nothing more than a delay tactic, which is the toxic offspring of denial, a refusal to accept that we have to make a change. The bonds that lie. Back to the con. Whether you've been chatting with him for 5 minutes or have known him for 5 months, you think to yourself, this is someone who really gets me. But when the emotional tether is not as strong as the con artist needs, for whatever he wants from you, he will weave in the strongest strand of compliance. Trust. The difference between faith and trust is profound. For example, we can have faith that things will work out or that a friend will come through for us, but we may still be plagued by worry and moments of doubt. When we have trust, however, negative thoughts do not fill our mind. We do not dwell on or worry about the outcome. Trust is an intellectual process, a natural outgrowth of an unblemished record. This is why he must establish trust. The time will come when he asks you to do something that makes little or no sense. If you trust him, then you will act quickly, without question or hesitation. Here is how he creates that trust. The Trust Accelerator. When a person shares private aspects of her life, this invokes two psychological influences. First, sharing creates unearned trust. When someone opens up, you think, if she trusts me, then I should be able to trust her. We needn't assume a malevolent intention. She might be emotionally fragile and need to unburden herself, seeking only a listening ear. That said, premature revelations, disclosures, or secrets, in combination with the other tactics, may be an attempt to force a connection, giving them psychological momentum that they have somehow earned your trust. This activates the second influence. You will be moved to reciprocate because it's only fair. When someone gives you something, like time, information, or a gift, you'll often feel indebted. Most salespeople are aware that if they invest a lot of time with you, showing you a product, demonstrating how it works, you will feel more obligated to buy it, even if you're not sure you really want it. Here, too, when a person shares herself with us, we may feel uneasy unless we reciprocate and share of ourselves. Cialdini explains the unethical approach of a top-producing salesperson who sold expensive heat-activated fire alarm systems. His in-home pitch started with a short test on fire knowledge. While the homeowners were busy jotting down their answers, he would invariably say that he had forgotten some really important information in the car that he needed to get. "I don't want to interrupt the test," he would add, "so would you mind if I let myself out and back into your home?" Cialdini notes that the answer was always some form of, "Sure, go ahead." Oftentimes, it required giving him a door key. Allowing someone to enter your home on his own is a tacit sign of trust. "I trust him because I let him enter my house by himself. He must be trustworthy because the only alternative is that I'm a complete fool." The act itself subconsciously embeds the belief that the salesman is someone who is trustworthy, and we listen to people we trust. In parts 1 and 2, we learned ways to read people in specific situations. Knowing the kind of person we're dealing with will assist us in predicting their behavior and guiding it when necessary. In part 3, you will discover how to assess a person's nature and how to detect the warning signs of a dominant and controlling personality. You'll also learn how to identify the potential for and trajectory of pathology. In other words, how emotional illness will manifest itself if their psyche is beginning to show cracks. Are they likely to become predator or prey?